No deal after a second day of U.S. government shutdown on Sunday. The Senate's now set to vote on a stopgap measure Monday at noon after canceling a vote slated for 1 a.m. Earlier, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had blamed Democrats' demands that President Trump negotiate on immigration as part of any deal. But late Sunday, McConnell offered up an olive branch, pledging to bring immigration to a floor debate if it was still an issue in early February.
As the global elite descend upon a Davos inundated with the biggest snowfall in 10 years for the annual World Economic Forum, they may be forgiven if they think they've stumbled onto the set of a once popular TV show where Donald Trump was the star.
Trump's threat to slap broad restrictions on steel and aluminum imports, his corporate tax cut, and his thrashing of the Iran nuclear talks are all policies which are likely to dominate the discussion all week long.
The U.S. stock market hit new highs again and again in the last 12 months, but for all the Wall Street enthusiasm, Wall Street traders are looking at big fat zeros in their paychecks. That's right, little to no bonuses for traders at some of the largest banks. Because while stocks soared, financial firms actually saw trading revenues drop. The Big Five reported an average revenue decline of 32% for the fourth quarter and 12% for the full year.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's January 22nd, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for the start of another business day and another business week. If you are a U.S. government worker, you are still off the job today, at least if you're non-essential. The government shutdown will continue today. That's obviously going to be one of our big stories this morning. We'll give you the details of that momentarily. A little bit later in the program, too, we'll talk about NAFTA. The negotiations kick up again this week, and Patrick Gillespie from CNN Money will be here to talk to us a little bit about, again, remind us what this fight in Washington is over, the DACA kids, the DACA program, immigration. He is well-versed in that area, and he will remind us again what this battle is over and the impact of some of these DACA recipients to the U.S. economy. And in a minute, we'll talk about some of the top 100 software companies. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are negative this morning, off about 52 points. NASDAQ futures and S&P futures are flat to negative. Around the globe, markets in Europe are generally mixed, with the FTSE, DAX, and CAC all up or down just about a point each. And in Asia this morning, markets also seem to be a little subdued, except for Hong Kong, where the markets are up almost a half a percent, 138 points. Oil is trading at $63.46 a barrel, which is up 9 cents. A couple of stories. Again, the government shutdown continuing today. The Senate scheduled to vote at noon Eastern on whether or not to cut off a Democratic filibuster of legislation to end the government shutdown. The top Democrat, Chuck Schumer, says there's still no agreement to pass the stopgap funding bill, but apparently there are still talks ongoing. The Senate appears to be inching closer to agreement to end the shutdown. The White House says President Trump won't budge on his demand that Democrats vote to reopen the government before negotiating on immigration policy. A spokesperson at the White House says accuses Democrats of trying to distract from Trump's first-year accomplishments. But the people in the Senate, the Democrats in the Senate, say that they're fighting for the DACA recipients, otherwise known as the Dreamers, in this immigration battle that has shut down the government. Again, the government shutdown today, stretching into its third full day. Also this morning, we're learning that Purdue University scientists have joined a team that's helping the Air Force develop technologies for super-fast aircraft. The Purdue researchers, now part of a group led by University of Dayton Research Institute, that landed a $9.8 million contract from an Air Force research arm. And the world's richest 1% received 82% of all wealth generated last year, while the world's poorest 3.7 billion people saw no wealth increase at all. That's according to an Oxfam report. The report found the world's billionaires have seen their wealth increase by an average rate of 13% every year since 2010, which was six times faster than the wages of ordinary workers, which have risen by a yearly average of just 2%, according to Oxfam. front and center this morning. Top 100 software companies. Ryan Bonici of G2 Crowd is with us this morning to talk more about this. Ryan, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks so much for having us.
Tell us first about what you do there at G2 Crowd.
Absolutely, Steve. I mean, at G2 Crowd, we built the platform to empower the millions of software buyers around the world, people maybe like yourself or myself, with the ability to transparently help one another find the right software for their business.
So you know what you're talking about here in terms of what is good and what's bad. I'm sure you see a lot of what is out there. You've reviewed 100 software companies or more than that and come up with the top 100.
Yeah, that's right, Steve. I mean, every month there's millions of software users that come to G2Crowd.com and they review the software that they're currently using. So if they're using a CRM or if they're using a time management tool, any piece of business software under the sun, they review it on G2Crowd.com. And then we basically aggregate all of those reviews in our very fancy algorithm, I'd like to think. And then we work out who are the best software companies of 2018. So we've got a big list today.
And so when you, what are the different criteria for the judging? I'm guessing what, price, the ease of use, those sort of things?
Yeah, great questions. I mean, there's 20 plus different kind of factors that we're considering in the algorithm. But the main two things to think of is customer satisfaction. So there's a lot of questions that we ask around customer satisfaction. And there's a lot of questions that we ask around market presence. So basically what we're trying to work out is how happy are the customers of a certain piece of software and how many of those happy customers are there? That sort of simplifies it.
One of the things that is starkly clear to me this morning in researching this segment is there's a lot of the different software that's on the list that I don't even recognize. Maybe it's because I'm not up on all of it, but there's a lot out there, isn't there?
There's a lot of different tools out there, and there's a lot of different categories as well. And I mean, if you look at obviously the top five companies in the top 100, Slack Technologies, which is, you know, a really incredible business chat solution, took the first position. But then the second to fifth positions, Shopify, Google, MailChimp, Salesforce, all very well-known companies, absolutely. But yes, if you go deeper into that top 100 list, you'll start to see that there's a lot more up-and-coming software companies that have just taken business consumers by storm and are growing incredibly quickly. So I think they're some of the future tech companies of the next, you know, few years, which is very exciting for them.
Some of those names would include what?
I mean, some of those names might include, you know, productivity tools like Asana, which is in the 16th position, or storage companies similar to Dropbox called Box in the 21st position. You know, there's even a tool called Prezi in the 32nd position, which is a competitor to Microsoft PowerPoint, which allows you to do, you know, presentations on the internet really quickly. So a lot of interesting companies that are up and running in the tool set.
Ryan, hang on with this. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk specifically about some of the top-ranked, some of the trends you're seeing. We're going to continue with Ryan Bonici of G2 Crowd. We're talking about some of the top 100 software companies out there. The list is out.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. 522 here now. We're with Ryan Bonici this morning at G2 Crowd, and we're talking about the world's top 100 software companies for 2018. And Ryan, before we went to the break, we sort of touched on a couple of them in the top five. Slack is at the top of that. Everybody, it seems that I know, uses this software platform. Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Slack is a San Francisco-based company, Steve, that's focused on workplace communications. So I think they've raised nearly around $800 million in venture capital over the last few years. And they've just been going from stride to stride, an incredibly inspiring company, and obviously one that their customers love, hence why they're in the first position. So exciting time for Slack.
Yeah.
But then if we look at some of the other lists as well, right, so we have that top 100 list, Steve, and then what we've done is we've broken it down into the top 50 mid-market software companies and then the top 50 small business as well. And I think that's when you start to see, you know, a broader and more interesting kind of grouping of companies too. So the company in the first position for mid-market software was MailChimp, which I'm not sure if you know MailChimp. A lot of people probably receive emails from them, but I want to say they're one of the world's leading email marketing providers. So they kind of came out in that first position for the mid-market space, and then in the small business space was a company called 15.5, taking out the first position. Company that had been growing incredibly fast, also based in San Francisco. And they focus on a lot of workplace management systems to help, I think, managers, you know, do better one-on-ones with their teams and pass feedback on with their businesses better.
It's interesting that you mentioned the different breakouts there in the mid-market and others. There are some Chicago companies that are on the list as well. Chicago-based Basecamp is in there, Active Campaign, Sprout Social. These are companies that people in Chicago will recognize.
That's absolutely the case, Steve. Yeah, there's definitely more and more Chicago companies that are growing on the list. I think when we look at the list from previous years, we've had record number of Chicago companies this year. So that's exciting. I think the Chicago market and the tech scene here is going through a really incredible growth stage. So very exciting.
Is there a way to tell from any of these rankings, especially with the Chicago companies, who might be a breakout in the year ahead, or what might move up this list? Or do you have the ones in the top five or the top 10 pretty strong in those categories to fight off their ranking?
You know what? It's interesting. We thought that that some of the companies that were in the top five, you know, throughout the year and over, you know, the last few months of 2017 wouldn't move. But we saw actually quite a lot of movement in the last few months. And I think the reason for that is that at the end of the year, at the start of the new year, a lot of business users have been going to G2Crowd actually and reviewing the software that they purchased in the previous years. And so those new reviews that are coming into our site start to then get fed into our algorithm, and they start to change things. So I'd say it's probably too soon to start to indicate who'd be up there for next year. But I'd say that, you know, if you do use any business software, there's anyone listening on the line, if they can head to g2crowd.com/best, not only can they review this list and they can click into more detail on each of these companies, but they can actually leave a review and start to actually help us build out this next list for next year.
Ryan, is there any sense of, you know, looking at this list to say who did something wrong over 1 year to the next? And that is, I mean, I know this is a review based on users. What has to happen for one of these companies to lose rank?
Did you say to be de-ranked?
So if you look at the trends of who's where and what, what are the surprises in terms of, let's say, a company dropping from a higher rank to a lower rank?
Yeah, great question, Steve. So I'd say the thing that will factor into a company lowering in their rank over the course of a year will ultimately come down to whether or not their customers are satisfied with their tools. So maybe in the previous year or over the last few months, the company has lost their focus on their customers, which I think can be, you know, a very hard thing for a lot of software businesses because they're incredibly fast growth. They're focusing on a lot of growth numbers. They're probably reporting those numbers to the board or to their VC-backed companies or potentially even to the market if they're public. And so I'd say there's a lot of things pulling these software companies in a lot of different directions. And when a company does start to go down in their ratings, it's often because they've lost that focus on their customer, or just a standout company has, you know, broken through in their field that has revolutionized their tool and is, you know, helping customers in new ways.
Ryan, when you look at this list, and I remember a few years ago people were talking about Sprout, and all of a sudden it became, you know, common knowledge and everyday talk. Is there a company of software on this list that you see that may be headed in that direction?
You know, I think Slack is potentially that company just at the moment, only because, and I think they have an incredibly unique model, Stephen, that they start with that completely freemium system, right? So, you know, business users don't need to be the only people using Slack's chat tools. I mean, me and my wife use it sometimes on our phones. We work at different companies, but we'll have our own personal Slack account, which is completely free to use. So I think Slack, part of where their growth numbers are coming from is that not only are business users using them, but also, you know, just consumers in general are starting to use them because they're free. So I'd say Slack is on the cusp of, you know, translating over into that space. But when I look through the list, I think, you know, Shopify are also there. You know, there's quite a few companies that I think are getting close to being, you know, much more popular than they have been in the past.
Ryan, very good of you to be with us this morning. Again, folks can head over to g2crowd.com, see this full list. We're going to link it out, too, with our podcast this morning. We appreciate you being with us this morning on The Opening Bell.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Ryan Bonici at G2 Crowd. Again, g2crowd.com. Best software companies. We're going to link that out to you as well this morning. The world's top 100 software companies for 2018.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Foursquare announced today that it has opened a new engineering office in Chicago. The company, which currently has a 10-person sales team in the Windy City, said it plans to hire 5 to 6 engineering roles this year and plans to continue building its Chicago team out beyond 2018. Foursquare launched in 2009 and is a location intelligence company and app for finding places nearby to eat, drink, shop, and visit. Bunker Labs, a Chicago-based resource for veteran entrepreneurs who have returned from military duty and want to start careers in tech and startups, won $180,000 at the WeWork Creator Awards Wednesday night at Madison Square Garden in New York City. And beginning in February, Airbnb will start collecting and remitting taxes on behalf of those in Evanston who rent out their homes on the platform. The home sharing company in Evanston announced the tax agreement Thursday. Evanston's hotel and vacation rental tax is 7.5%. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the program. Lots going on this morning around the world. We're going to check in with Patrick Gillespie at CNN Money. Mexicans sending cash back home at record numbers. NAFTA negotiations getting back underway. But Patrick, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. Good to talk with you again. I want to briefly talk first about the government shutdown. Remind us again about the Dreamers and their impact on the economy.
Well, there are about 800,000 young people here in the United States who qualify into this program. And if anything, the United States economy needs more young workers, whether they're U.S.-born or foreign-born. They're a key part of the economy, and if anything, U.S. growth depends on the labor market, the job force, getting bigger as the years go on. And right now we have an aging U.S.-born population. A lot of baby boomers are retiring. So we've been, for the last few years, we've been replenishing those retiring workers with foreign-born workers more and more. And so DACA DACA protectees are, at least in an economic sense, a very important part of economic growth and job growth here in the United States.
Immigration, too, as a whole, I mean, that's part of the bigger fight that's going on in Washington. That's also a big deal. You mentioned that it's that we're losing workers, older workers. Where else would we get these workers if we don't allow immigration?
Well, it's interesting. When you speak to farmers or you even speak to factory owners at manufacturing firms, they'll tell you, they put a job posting out. Anyone can apply for it. It could be an American. It could be an immigrant. And oftentimes they can't get an American to apply to a farm job, for instance. They can't get the visa for an immigrant worker. So they turn to automation. So you'll often hear about companies saying or considering that if they can't get foreign-born workers and if no Americans want to apply for their jobs, then they have to turn to automation. So you're seeing whole swaths of jobs and categories sort of becoming obsolete and being turned over to robots because, there's about 6 million open jobs in the United States right now, and that's with 6 million open jobs right now, the United States needs more foreign-born workers or more Americans willing to take on, jobs that are in very hands-on industries.
We've heard from all sides in this fight in Washington all kinds of things from over the weekend. One of the things I heard that sort of jumped out was that the Dreamers are illegal immigrants, that they're here illegally and not contributing. That's not really the case, is it? Is that fair?
Well, at the moment, they have legal protection because they qualified for the DACA program. These are people who came to the United States at a relatively young age and now have legal protection under the DACA program. So this is really about what the Republicans would like to do with with DACA and how they want to, you know, treat these people. But a lot of these people have had the vast majority of their lives spent in the United States. We've spoken to many of them. They, you know, we spoke to some of them who are from El Salvador, for instance, and they will tell you that they, you know, they speak English better than Spanish, or they speak English better than Mandarin, or any other language. So it's kind of an interesting conundrum, but these are Americans.
Let's talk about a story that you've written that we initially had you on for today, and that is Mexicans sending money back home from the U.S. At a record pace last year. What did you find?
Yeah, so the Mexicans in the United States have been sending money home. These money transfers are known as remittances, and it's at an all-time, it's on pace to break an all-time record for 2017. Through the first 11 months of the year, about $26 million was sent from the United States to Mexico. Most of this is checks being cashed at the bank, Western Union transfers being sent home, and this has become such a valuable source of income for people in rural parts of Mexico that there's more money being sent home in the form of remittances than there is in the form of oil exports from Mexico. So oil exports are worth about $18 billion, and this is at $26 billion. So this is becoming a key source of income for millions of Mexicans.
In your reporting, have you figured out what it is that drove up those numbers last year?
There's a couple of forces happening at the same time, Steve. The Mexican peso is at it's around its all-time lowest level. So when you're sending dollars home, that's going further and further. At the same time, President Trump, early in his presidency and during his campaign, he threatened often to put a tax on remittances to help finance a payment for the border wall. He's often said that Mexico will pay for the wall, and this is one of the ways he says he has said in the past they could pay. And many economists believe that those fears that President Trump might put a restriction on remittances drove that trend upwards. And we've been really seeing remittances go up for a couple of years, but there's been a particular surge since President Trump made this threat. On top of that, Steve, one last point. There was a very tragic earthquake in Mexico City in September. Hundreds of people were killed, and many believe that there's been a surge in remittances since that earthquake.
We look at this, why? Because this is money that's going out of the United States, out of our economy, into the Mexican economy. Is that one of the big reasons?
This was not much of a topic in years past, Steve. This was something that we knew about, that it was a trend, but I think economists will tell you that when money is going home to Mexico, that is helping to, you know, pay for schools in Mexico, for, you know, people to buy groceries and sort of all sorts of everyday essential payments and errands. And so it many economists would say that it helps to prevent illegal immigration because it provides a sense of wealth and income for people in Mexico. So we talk about DACA, we talk about illegal immigration. Well, many economists believe that, you know, a surge in remittances is helping to push back against more illegal immigration by helping to provide Mexican families at home with some sense of income.
Patrick, before we let you go, can we talk a little bit about NAFTA? Negotiations are going to restart again this week. Where do we stand with that?
NAFTA negotiations are heading into the decisive round. They start on Tuesday formally, negotiators will be meeting in Montreal, Canada today, and they met yesterday as well. And really, this is coming down to very one thorny issue, which is how and where cars are manufactured in the United States and in North America. Right now, there's a rule, it's called Rules of Origin, and I won't be too technical, Steve, but basically about 60% of the parts in a car sold anywhere in North America have to come from North America, and the Trump administration wants to raise that threshold from about 60% to 85%. And on top of that, half of the parts that would come from North America must come from the United States, according to the Trump administration's proposal. So this proposal, so far, Mexico and Canada have said this is a deal breaker. We can't do this. There's only 7 rounds of negotiations. This is round 6. And so far, there has been no progress on the sticky devices issues.
What is your gut telling you on this, having covered a lot of this?
You know, the odds of President Trump withdrawing from this agreement have certainly increased in my view and a lot of people's view. I thought for a long time that eventually all sides will come together, make a compromise, you know, find some sort of sensible solution. But now we've been through 5 rounds. There's been no progress. The differences between the Mexican proposals, the Canadian proposals, and the Trump administration's proposals are, it's a pretty wide gap right now. So someone is going to have to make a massive compromise this week, or we may be seeing the last of NAFTA in 2018.
The stakes are very high. I know your reporting has suggested that the loss of maybe 300,000 jobs could result if NAFTA goes away in America.
Yes, there was a recent research report put out by a group called Oxford Economics that suggested that 300,000 American jobs, mostly in industries that are very trade-dependent, like manufacturing, transportation, farming, those jobs would be put at risk because if NAFTA is torn up, because the moment you get rid of a free trade agreement, the countries start to put tariffs and other restrictions back in place that used to be there 24 years ago when NAFTA became law for the first time. So there are jobs at risk in the immediate term. Overall, about 14 million American jobs depend on trade with Mexico and Canada. It's not clear if all of those, it doesn't seem like all of those would be affected immediately, but there certainly could be a long-term effect. And for American consumers who want to buy cars and refrigerators and all those things, that would become more expensive because companies would either have to build more of it here in the United States, and that is more expensive because American workers must be paid more than Mexican workers, or tariffs would make the product more expensive coming across the border. So there's some very interesting times in trade ahead, and we'll keep you posted, Steve.
All right, Patrick, good information this morning. Thank you for being with us again.
Thanks so much, Steve.
All right, Patrick Gillespie from CNN Money. Patrick covers the economy, also U.S. and Latin America. You can follow him on Twitter at @Pat_Gillespie and read all of his material at CNN Money.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures right now off 42 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are flat. Gold and silver are mixed this morning. Gold is off about 40 cents an ounce at $13.3280. Let's get the latest on agriculture and more commodities. Sears Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We begin this week with new rules for the pork industry. Federal government regulators proposed changes Friday in the way that most hogs are slaughtered for meat in the United States and are processed in a series of new rules that officials say improve industry practices, but critics say they could imperil food safety. The new rules would allow hog processing plants to voluntarily join a new proposed inspection system that would put plant employees in charge of removing animals unfit for slaughter before they're processed. Government inspectors who currently perform the function would be moved to other areas of the plant focused more on food safety. The proposed rules are similar to ones that were drawn up in 2014 for the poultry industry. Critics have said such changes turn too much of the inspection and food safety testing over to the companies. So it, first of all, has to go through a hearing process, and so it'll be a while before the rules go into effect, if indeed they do. Meanwhile, pork prices at the Mercantile Exchange down 75 cents a hundredweight on Friday. February live cattle futures down just 2 cents, and January feeder cattle futures down $1.67. And as far as the grain trade is concerned, we'll start the week after a 2 cent loss per bushel in wheat futures, but a penny gain in corn futures and a 2 cent gain in soybean futures at last Friday's trade. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, January 22nd. There are no major government economic reports scheduled for release during the early part of this week, but there are a bevy of corporate earnings and other reports. For instance, today, Chicago Fed National Activity Index is out. Netflix reports quarterly financial results after the market closes today. Johnson & Johnson reports earnings tomorrow. United Continental Holdings also tomorrow. On Wednesday, the National Association of Realtors has existing home sales for December. Comcast reports quarterly financial results. And Ford Motor Company also reports on Wednesday. That's just some of the things that could move the markets starting today, this January 22nd.